And hello, there we go. All right. If I need to sync up the two recordings, so I have some starting point. All right. Anyway, you were saying your day is, everyone's day is jam packed.
But yeah, no, I think that's true. And a lot of it's, of course, self-inflicted.
It's all self-inflicted.
Oh, no, I'm a victim also. Oh, yeah, so it's entirely different talk. It's all about me. But no, I think having a apparently self-made about 19 different careers, sometimes they all collide in one day.
Right.
And so it's, you know, a lot of very different subjects.
Before we get too far, let me fill in my audience a little bit about some of these 19 things. So please tell us. You are a garden designer, a plantsman,
explore, breed, introduce, look for, and hopefully get out to the world new and appropriate plants for our region in northwestern Oregon, but hopefully all over the place. Running a nursery is lots of fun, mostly, but lots of moving parts and lots of things, and fun right now with a brand new website, et cetera, happening.
Which is?
Launching right now.
The website is?
Cistus.com.
Okay.
Exciting things in my life are living on an island and not having had high-speed internet for some time. We had to take data and put it in the trunk of the car and take it into town to do anything with it. Spruce it up, put it in a box and get it going. So having Starlink now, maybe sleeping with the devil a bit, but it's changed things. So brand new everything happening with lots more connectivity, which of course means homework content, as they say, which is lovely, but you know, you don't want to be have your website launch with no clothes on. So we're clothing ourselves. And
although the internet was founded on different principles, I agree with you.
That is a good point. And we have not introduced that yet into our own website, though it might draw traffic or scare people away. I'm not sure which. No, I think the nursery is very fun, but it's a few different things. It's having a factory, hopefully making a decent product, but also attempting to inspire people to think outside the boxwood, as they say in horticulture, and try new things and become excited also about it.
But you've done some big projects as a garden designer. Yes?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, that little company down in California?
Right. Apple Campus, their headquarters. That was quite an adventure. And
what did you do there?
I developed the plant palette and then led the team in sort of designing where those plants would go with an amazing landscape architect who we really, it was hand in glove with them. So it was very good. So we got a great landscape in, and I think at least to some degree changed the face of horticulture in the Bay Area in the difficult transition between more traditional plants. We all desire the English garden somehow still, even on this side of the continent. And they switched over to native, almost all Western native and some Mediterranean things. Not boxwooded in, no. And you know, doing that has some baggage as far as how to take care of plants, but it worked.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really good. Mm-hmm. And there's some other projects happening in that part of the world, and then lots of local things.
You came from the Bay Area as the director of the botanical gardens?
I was born and raised here in Portland, but went to school and was a curator at the University of California Botanic Garden. And thought at some point it was great to flee university politics and come back to a place I really love. So opened my own design business, and then of course diddled in other things. So the director of collections at Portland's Hoyt Arboretum, curated the collections for the Chinese Garden in Portland when it went in about 2000, and other projects locally like that. So it's business, it's campuses, it's residential. It's hopefully, I've been lucky actually to be able to pick and choose a little bit the projects I do, because there are some really interested people and interesting people out there, and they're fun to hang out with. So.
Right. So when you start a project, well, let me just say what happens to me and compare your experience to mine. I'll sit down with a client and in conversation with them, something will pop into my head. Does that happen to you, or do you already come in with an idea?
Oh no, I just tell them what they want and that's it.
Exactly.
No, it's always a conversation. My own course of action is, and again, now 99% somebody contacts me or the nursery, and we're all a little bit typecast. We're typecast in different things, but they've done their homework. Somebody's told them. So we don't have to do a sales job, which is nice. So we get to sort of jump right into what drew you to what I do or what the nursery does, what projects, or was it just visiting the nursery and sometimes that it? We actually have a small design presence on our website now. Actually have people knowing that we do it. But right away, they usually tell me what drew them to us. And then I will ask them both, it's a combination of specifics and general ideas. So where have you been in your history that draws you to certain things? Like I think any design would do, but it becomes a combination of the physical space we're looking at, whether it's a campus or a residence. Sometimes it faces north, sometimes it faces south. Sometimes there are the next step, have to have a giant outdoor kitchen and grill or whatever. So there are necessities also. And then we get to the fun part, which is how do you want to create your surroundings? And I attempt to listen there because people are excited. Sometimes they are just all Pinterested out the yin yang and send me 4,000 images, and I can pick through them. Actually, it's very helpful because I can pick things, guess a lot about their tastes, and pick things that will work locally. Other times, it's they've thought about it so much it's hard to know where to start because it's a it's a sea of details.
Do you get a blank slate sometimes?
Sometimes.
Yeah. And how do you face that?
Well, blank slates are fun, but it also depends on then how much input is there from said client. Because I love the idea of just being able to start from scratch, but there are people that say, "Oh, just do what you do. I just love it. Anything." And there's about a 76.3% chance that if you just do what you do without input, there'll be things they don't like about it.
I think it's a
Oh,
higher percentage than
yeah,
that.
all right. But I thought you'd, do X,
Right.
Y, or Z. So, no matter what they say, I pull the same information out of them. Sometimes it's more conversational, sometimes not. I want to know their nest before we do anything. And then it gets them excited about it. And then they always come up with more specifics. So.
Do you design from a let's see. How do I think about your method of design? Is it color, or is it texture? Is it plants? Is it, well, I mean, I know there are certain requirements, as you just mentioned, the I need a barbecue, or that I need
Right.
space, or
Aside from, I would say almost any garden and any place, any campus, any building needs what I call intuitive wayfinding. So
intuitive
intuitive wayfinding.
wayfinding. Okay.
So in a way, you're on a college campus and it's where the architects have put all the pathways, and then it's where people actually walk. So they're all the desire paths walking through things or the dirt through the turf. I try to predict where the dirt pathways will be,
Uh-huh.
either physically or metaphorically, before they are ever an issue. So before we even start an interview, there's the climate, there's exposure, there's building, there's style, there are all kinds of things that I have in mind. And then with client, it's we can jump ahead a little bit, listen to ideas, and then it's a pretty quick process to then start putting shapes into place. I don't know if that quite answered your question, but
Well, it does and it doesn't a little. I'm really interested in wayfinding because one of my design books shows a path, just as you say, you know, in a sort of meandering path, not a straight line. The way we lay out sidewalks is this meandering byway, and divining that must be challenging, I would think.
I think it's fun. I think part of, having done design for a while, there are good points to being a tiny bit jaded. And
Jaded in what sense?
jaded in that one can predict, for instance, in a given space, human cadence. And often people get so excited about any design. There are a lot of elements, and then let's put paths to those elements. And so it can be really disjunct, but even if it's not, there are paths between things. And a good example is those that want a hot tub. If it's not easy enough to step right out of your whatever into the hot tub, you're just not going to use it. It's too much work. And any spot where you're traversing in your own space, if you have to go to effort to even walk around the garden, it mentally becomes too much work. So it's awfully good to have, for instance, a series of open spaces, what I call negative space, and elements within those. So not only does it not look too cluttered, but it's easy to do. It's just easy going.
Is there This brings to mind Christopher Alexander's book, A Pattern Language. Are there
Which is
patterns that
very much so.
around the world we garden designers know of, people respond to?
There are. I think it really depends on, what you're trying to get out of it. We don't all have Versailles to redesign. And so sometimes we have to, we make our world is finite, so we do all that within that
I mean
world.
a budget.
AKA budget. So, I'm in love with pattern language. I mean, it says so much. But there are behaviors, and we as a species seem to repeat those no matter how we try to escape that. There are just things we do and things we want to do. And so part of it is how do we create the atmosphere for ourselves that seems it makes ourselves content most of all and happy. But also, one of the bigger aspects of it is what I call the company's coming syndrome. What's it going to be like when people arrive? And I think I've told you the story about sort of how we use our space, but how we imagine we use our space, often really different things. And sometimes how we never use our space, but wish we did, is more important. And I think I told you about having a couple of Adirondack chairs out in the garden, what we called the moon garden at the old house. And looking out the dining room one day, I could just get a glance of them. And I'd had those things in the garden 12 years. And it just dawned on me that every time I turned the corner and looked outside, I'm busy doing something else. I thought, oh, I could be sitting out there in the garden and all the things that could be happening.
I
I've got a
remember.
glass of wine, my first vodka of the morning, whatever I'm doing. And I also then thought, huh, because I had sat in those chairs twice in 12 years, both of them for interviews. And so it's like, sit in here, we'll turn on the cameras and it'll look really natural. Just, do what you do. It's like, yeah, but I never
Well,
do this.
one of the most unnatural things in your
Relaxing
routine.
in the garden, I don't think so. So it's really funny. Part of it is the imagination. And so when we're looking at, just physical things in somebody's garden, what are you going to, yes, you want to imagine what it's going to be like when company comes. And part of that intuitive wayfinding is no matter what the building situation, you want people to feel comfortable with knowing where the front door is. It's more difficult sometimes than you might think, especially for my friends. But also, you're going to look at your garden, most of us, more from inside doing something else than you are ever from when you're outside. And there are views you imagine, and there are views that are reality. You imagine the grandiose view out the bathroom or the windows that you go look at to look at the garden. Really, you see most of the views of your garden when you're doing the dishes or something like that.
Right.
So it's sort of how does this work? And for myself here, we've been tackling a 5-acre addition to the property, and it was a tangle when we took it over. And I need at least the illusion that the inner neatness freak in me can be soothed. So I've designed it so looking out of the house, it's a gravel terrace, it's rather simple plantings. So I can pretend that life is in order when I look out from my office.
Ah, yes. Nature conquered. I've done it
At
again.
least the first 10 feet
Well,
for the moment.
I don't know if we'll have pictures of Cistus on the artist page. I hope so. Let me just try to describe. We're on Sauvie Island outside of Portland, about 10 miles northwest of Portland, along the or the Willamette River. And from this, you can see Mount Hood on a clear day. See St. Helens on a clear day.
Very much right out the window.
Yeah.
The giant ships in the Columbia
Yeah.
Harbor.
Right. And so, flat, very flat island, incredibly productive, verdant. And it was a 5-acre parcel that the previous owners had.
Right.
And you started a little nursery in back with Parker.
Back in the day when things were in black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then created this amazing garden space with plants from different zones and just a completely different way of experiencing a nursery compared to most.
Yes.
And a really experiential experience there.
Experientially, those are the best kind.
I had to use that second word to be clear. Here's what strikes me. Tell me if I'm way off base. It seems like you have to gather a whole lot of knowledge and information in order to help your clients.
I think anybody would. I mean, I would expect, even if it's not the reality, that anyone doing work that is serving a client base needs to know a lot of stuff in order to help their clients.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's in it for the client? And so, with any question, with any decision, really, there are sometimes hundreds of moving parts, even with a garden.
Yeah, well, there's lots of cookie cutter designers out there that
Sure.
just pop out what they saw in House Beautiful this month
Right,
or
right.
Fine Gardening, and there you go.
No, exactly. And I think what a combination of things. Again, back to sort of everybody wants the British garden. One size doesn't fit all on this very large continent we live on. And so part of what we do is maybe suggest that this thing does really well in New Jersey, really isn't the best thing for here, unless you have another $500 a month for watering it
Right.
and can throw some ice cubes on it in the winter.
Right.
So, right plant, right place is kind of a cliche, but right garden, right region is much more what we're looking at. So we're really trying to do things that really make success in the garden.
Has your palate changed over time?
Yeah, for sure.
No.
I used to grow really crappy things, and now
Now you know how.
exactly, and make them look good for September. No, I think the palette's been added to, and I like plants from all over the world. I love colors and textures and succulents and not succulents and you name it. We used to grow probably a larger percentage of, say, Asian textural plants, meaning things like schefflerias and palms and things like that. We still do. I mean, we really believe strongly in regional climate and regional plants and things that are appropriate for this climate, but also really love things that are wildly inappropriate. So we kind of, old Gary Larson cartoon that I've always loved, and it's two polar bears holding an igloo, and one of them says, I just love these. They're crunchy on the outside and soft in the middle. And so what we say here is because we live in a very dry summer climate and have well over 7 months that just don't get enough water to water your anything. So we say, all right, even in a smaller garden, plant your natives, your manzanitas and your olives that are from the Mediterranean and things like that on the outside. You've got so many, the fragrances of Mediterranean plants are wonderful, the look and the feel. And then save the lush things for the courtyard, whether it's metaphorical or not, because we can have the best, really the best of both worlds here. So that's what we kind of try to get people to do. And then, there's been a movement, of course, of very minimalist gardens, which kind of look good in a magazine, but in reality, they're kind of like scratching your fingernails on a chalkboard. They can be pretty discombobulating if you live in one, because you don't have that balance of human-made architecture with quote-unquote natural surroundings. You've got square on square on square, and to me, that overdoes it a bit.
Have you ever gone fallow? Have you run out of ideas?
Oh, daily, several times a day. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's funny. I will be super enthusiastic and full of ideas about a project, and it gets to a certain point, and I'm thinking, especially when there are conflicting ideas, either from client or from the situation. And at some point, if I realize I'm forcing an idea onto that piece of paper, I totally shut down. So, and sometimes, honestly, it's days before I can circle around. And honestly, I probably have 25 or 30 projects right now that I need to circle back to.
How do you get started again?
Usually at 3 a.m. or so,
Really?
I come up with an idea about that project. I think,
Are you asleep or awake or in the middle?
It's in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
Interesting.
of course, my phone the next morning is filled with notes that don't mean a damn thing.
Like writing on that pad next to your,
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
write in Arabic.
No, yeah, exactly. No, I also, it's essentially typing a text to myself without my glasses on. It's kind of the same thing. Some of these sentences are actually pretty entertaining in the morning, but they don't necessarily mean anything.
It's interesting that mid zone between your dream state and being fully awake and unable to sleep, and those aren't productive times for me.
No, but often writing it down
Writing it down is important.
is great, and it's what I call the idea train. Once one little problem is solved, my mind jumps all over the place. Sometimes it'll solve a bunch at once, and it's often they weren't problems. They were just. I've learned enough now to realize that when I'm not feeling inspired by that portion of the project or that stage of the project, I could force it through. But I know I'm never as happy with it, so I do let it rest until the, client calls me for the sixth time with their hands on their hips, I'm sure. But
Do you find that in the middle of one project, you start thinking about another?
oh, all the time. Sometimes I'll have four or five projects out because a lot of them overlap, and that to me is really fun because I get to compare them. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I find I'm working at the bench and doing something that needs to be done, but it's, I wouldn't say mundane, but it's sort of regular, and my mind just starts jumping to these other ideas.
Well, I think for me, having somewhat notoriously, ask my friends, short attention span, it really does help for me to be able to concentrate maybe intensely on one thing, and then just leave it for a little bit. But I've got another thing, a shiny object right over here, and I will circle back around. And it, I know people say you can't do that, but I seem to have to. So.
Well, I think one of the things that's important is finding the rhythm, the pace, the flow that a creator needs, and learning to nurture that.
I think so. And writing is another thing that with a lot of projects right now, it takes even more, allowing sort of mellowness to come in, which is why I'm overdue with so many writing projects. But I guess I can say it is a balance. And sometimes the balance is balance, and sometimes it's just the center of two wild extremes. So most of my time is that right center of extremes.
In the center of the storm,
Right.
the calm. What do you think of this quote? This is from Buckminster Fuller.
Oh.
And it was actually from a book on mathematics that I was reading on the golden ratio. If the solution is beautiful, then I know it's right. What do you think?
Yeah. Again, there's so many different types. There are so many different types of projects. Sometimes the solution just has to be factual. But to me, the solution to remember that quote, it's warm and fuzzy as much as it is beautiful. Somehow I want to sit down with a glass of wine at the result of that thought process. And it's then that I know that this is going to be a good spot. And that's a little, just getting there is a dam that breaks. And then suddenly everything else fills in.
Yeah, for me, I it's there's this, I have to feel there's this unspoken sense about the piece. There's that will come through to the client, emanates from the piece. That's something of a combination of the effort I put into it, but also, just the little things that I hope they'll notice.
It's, the cliche, does it bring joy? That's part of it. For I have to be able to portend joy into any garden, any work that happens. And that way, I have to think that if I'm getting joy from it, they will also. Especially if I've just, there are all these ingredients they've suggested, and suddenly think, oh my gosh, this has it all. And it doesn't always work, but it usually does.
Can you describe your design work in three words?
Oh my goodness. There's going to be some sort of blank. You're going to have to do some editing
That's fine.
here.
Let's have a slug of wine and
Right.
think about it.
Yeah, good point.
Actually, I would use this as a when I was hiring people for the studio to describe themselves, and I would say that I personally am driven and I'm creative and I'm peripatetic. And the one gal who rolled her eyes at the word peripatetic,
I like parapets.
I like parapets too. I don't know. You don't have to do that.
No, I think for me it would be listen, imagine, and there's got to be a word for it, but it's listen, imagine, and immerse for me. I've got to be able to put together all these pieces of a little puzzle out of somebody else's mind, and they've been thinking about it. Sometimes they haven't been thinking about it, and it's just something to check off. And then I go about it kind of in a different, I just do what I would want to do if I were there. But if I get to listen to their bits and bobs from their collection of desires, and then I can imagine what combinations those will be, and then we're all sitting in it having a glass of wine. And so I have to be able to fly visually through any project I do on my own little drone. And as many layers as they are.
So you visualize this?
Oh yeah, no, I can, Tuesday's blue. I have colors for everything. And I can say that, with the campus work, and by the time there have been so many iterations in a larger project, buildings move, hills move, all kinds of things happen. I can usually visualize a very small part of that project exactly where it is, exactly where every tree is placed in my mind. And it's the same with somebody's garden. By the time it's done, man, I know exactly what that garden looks like. And I know what it'll look like in 5 years, 10 years. And I can describe, I could describe the party they're going to have in 6 years because of this whole design project.
That's so interesting because your work is so involved with people's day-to-day life, but also relaxation and celebration and life.
And their imagination.
Yeah.
And again, going back to what do you want to do with this space and how's it going to be part of your life?
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask somebody often, questions have to come from a lot of different directions. And one little scenario I ask them to create is that, all right, it's 2 years from now. It's a warm, toasty July Portland evening. You're having a party for 300 to 600 of your best friends. And what's it look like? What is the situation? And let's name a theme of the party.
Mm-hmm.
So you will begin to realize what you're serving on those platters of food.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite cocktails? What are people wearing? And what are the colors you're surrounded by? What is the atmosphere? And they can also then start dropping ingredients into that situation.
I think it's really important to have people verbalize what they're thinking or what they think they're thinking about. I think it's just important. And important for the designer, too.
And you, too. I'm sure you learned to translate somebody that I guess you would call lay. They're I'm sure, experts in what their own field is, not necessarily having the vocabulary you do in yours.
I have had to train so many clients.
Oh, absolutely.
It's, yeah. I mean, they just don't know. They're not visual people. And they might be great lawyers or whatever. But,
well, also, I mean, with woodworking, I imagine that there is still some room to wiggle.
There's no wiggle in woodworking.
Oh, of course there is. Unless you have a three-legged stool, nothing's ever going to be even. No, I would think that even with a rather precise design for a piece of furniture, you're going to have inspiration all the way through and say, what do you mean? What if we did this?
Right.
And it's the same with designing, you know, almost anything, really. So it's interesting when I've had clients that are, for instance, engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, so, you know, my process is we talk until everybody's talked out. I go back, I do my drawings. And there are questions and answers in between. They come up with, you know, it's a paint by numbers. Here's where we'd put everything. Here's the hardscape. Here's what kind of stone I'd recommend. Go out and look at it. Start talking to installers and all of that kind of stuff. But as that happens, you're thinking, what's it really going to be like? And that is going to change over the course of the entire time.
Sure.
And it's nice to have that wiggle room.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely nice to have that wiggle room. The difference between your work and mine is that your work continues to grow.
Well, it's true. I mean, a friend of mine, we do some public housing work, and we have come to the conclusion that when their buildings and landscape are finished, the buildings immediately begin losing value. The landscape, if it's well taken care of, continues to gain value.
Right.
And it can always be difficult with a larger project when, if we don't have the right people maintaining it,
mm-hmm.
they can really mess it up pretty quickly. Right. There's that too. But having an engineer, some of that training is, so even with a pretty good exact planning plan, nothing is perfect. So we're looking out a window or looking at a drive thinking, you know, if that tree were 5 feet over this way, then it would block the utility pole and or block your neighbors staring at you when you're having your morning coffee. So part of that is then things are placed and the luxury of having, unless it's a giant tree, plants come out of a truck and being placed around, mm-hmm. we get to move things mm-hmm. and change things around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my quote unquote best plans would be probably 80% accurate when all is said and done.
Really? Do you think of yourself as a painter then? Sounds like it.
I think so. I think it might be a little much for me to call myself a painter, but.
But you know, you have a canvas, you have a palette of plants to choose from.
I can dip my fingers in different colors and. You put it all over the
put it yeah. all over your face exactly. and your clothing. here's an odd question for you, but this popped into my head. mainly because I'm thinking of building a new shop space, and a fellow I know out in Parkdale gave me the name of a stone guy whose name is Olmsted. He's elderly. I don't know. I could look up. I don't remember his first name. And I thought about your previous neighbor.
Right.
And then I thought about Frederick Law Olmsted.
Right.
If you were going to design Central Park,
Honestly, I don't know if I would have had the Olmsted brothers' insight. So much of what they did really was new to science.
right.
And to have the foresight to really realize that this is becoming a really populous city, and this landscape has more to do with soothing the human mind than it does about anything else,
Right.
recreation or anything else. And the way they went about it, the way he went about it, and he freely admits he was making it up as he went along. He said, and I misquote, "If there were just science behind what we're doing, so we're still doing this by intuition." What, and in a way, in a much grander sense, what I do usually in a much smaller sense, is I put myself in others' heads and think, what would make me happy here? And that's what he did with Central Park and his Portland projects. And
Yeah, so if people don't know that Forest Park is one of his designs as well.
yeah, Laurelhurst Park here in Portland. And he had other plans that were never fully implemented. What we're calling this, what he called the String of Pearls, that was pedestrian walkways around the Faultscarp Bluffs in North Portland, back around to the other side. Our little botanical garden project is at the base of one of those bluffs.
Oh, great.
That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, great. How's that coming along?
It is so much critical mass happening. We have dozens and dozens and dozens of incredible people in Portland and elsewhere that are toiling away. So,
Great.
yeah.
Is there a timeline? Is there a,
Oh, of course, there's a timeline,
yeah,
which
is there a
means
reason?
absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Among our group, I'm almost always the most enthusiastic, sometimes at least realistic. But I'm hoping if our final negotiations for our two bits of land come to fruition in the next month, we'll be breaking ground within a year to 18 months
Oh, wow.
and have something to show pretty quickly within 2 to 3 years.
I have described you as a visionary. I'm going to describe you as a visionary. Because you have this sense of seeing space or projects in space in a way that doesn't occur to most people. How is that possible? Where does this come from? Is it just, are you just lucky? Are you blessed with this optimism?
I'm a psychopath, actually. That's the earliest.
And thank you very much, everyone, for coming. It's a wrap here.
I appreciate that. You know, I think I was lucky to have, oh, as a friend of my parents once put it, we lived on a street up in the West Hills in Portland growing up, and you go down to the end of the street and go into the woods and build a fort or climb a tree. And as a friend of my parents said, "Slay my dragons." And I want all kids to have what I had in the ability to slay my dragons. And that I've really tried to carry with me. So maybe it's given me a decent sense of empathy when it comes to an overall population and what makes it happy. I had a long discussion last night with someone who's going on to the Urban Forestry Commission, and lots, endless statistics about what makes a healthy environment. Turns out having lots of trees in a neighborhood does a lot for
No.
everything from death rates to
Yeah.
wellness to
Yeah.
everything else. And so I can extrapolate, if you plant this camellia and it flowers in January by your front door, that'll make you happy for a minute.
Yeah.
If we try to change the way our city works in such a way that we expect people to enjoy anywhere they go in the city. And parts of that city actually bring them joy when they're there and inspire them. And by the way, their kids get to see a Venus flytrap and it indoctrinates them into the science world, that kind of thing. So it's, to me, it's all about tools. I guess it's all about manipulation, really. Can being
Manipulative.
manipulative be the same thing as visionary? I don't know. Let me think about that. I'm going to go off into my room for a minute.
I think
Think
not.
about what I've said.
I think not, but yeah, we need to do an intro and an outro, but so here's the question I ask all my guests. Our title for this podcast is Creativity Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves. Which one are you?
Oh, hustlers, what?
Fakers and thieves.
Oh, all of the above, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when one works for oneself, I think you, at least in the early days, you're always hustling because what if clients stop? That
Sure.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
So unlike, say, working for a public entity, I suppose you could do something silly and get fired, but really there always is that in the back of your mind. And that's, causes one to once in a while take a project on by someone you don't think maybe you'll get along with. But, I think I can change anyone, so, I'm usually wrong. But, faking it, to me, it's sometimes creating the illusion that the atmosphere is going to be so much better in the future, either individually or in a greater sense. That's faking it. But it's not like that now. So,
No, it's not.
and what was the other one? The thief?
Thief.
It's funny. I think I have this deep fear of not giving somebody what they've paid for. And it's kind of a weird thing, but I don't want somebody to have either hurt feelings or just not be satisfied with what they've got. And I'm contacted by a lot of people, and I try to do a bit of a sliding scale as far as what charges are. And because sometimes people are willing to sacrifice a lot to get to the end point. And the way I soothe that for myself is I allow myself to give a little time away.
Where's the thief part come in all this then?
Because I think I'm ripping people off
Oh.
if I charge them too much or that kind of thing. I don't
I wouldn't think that would be a concern. I'm here with Sean Hogan, garden designer, nurseryman, Cistus Nursery, Cistus Design Nursery, to be specific.
Yeah.
Neighbor of mine for many years, owner of Brody, the wonder dog. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Gary. This was great. And thanks for the glass of wine.
This was supposed to be the intro, Sean, not the outro.
Oh, well.
It's okay. We'll make it work. I see the nice picture of Brody. Yeah. Here's a couple of quick questions. A newcomer to the business. I don't know about the people who you have working for you, if they think about garden design or design their own gardens. How would you guide them to find their own source of inspiration? What would you point them towards? Would it be books or would it be
Yeah, I mean, books
different?
are always great to stir the imagination. There are some great authors out there. Olivier Philippe and Claire Takis, that we can add spelling later, both have just inspirational, mostly visual things. A lot of gardeners are already inspired. What often they need is just a little lesson or two about what part of the world they live in and what's going to make things most successful for them. I think what I encounter more than anything else are the 46.3 people we have come into our midst every week that have just moved to Portland that are going to practice horticulture and garden design. And so the advice is always You got to learn the climate and the climates. You've got to know. I did a taught for a local community college for a few semesters when their professorship abandoned the scene, and these were the people who were just about to graduate. But, all right, where are we now? So I gave them a little quiz. What is our climate classified as? How cold do we get in the winter? How hot do we get in the summer? How much rain do we get? When do we get our rain? What climate zones are we? Which is a there are a couple of systems that are used. Sunset Magazine did one, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture has done one, and they're different things, but they're super important if you're going to either garden or practice putting other people's gardens in. 35 people, one person got our USDA zone right.
Wow.
One person knew that we didn't get rain in the summertime. None of them knew what our temperatures were. And these were people that were just about to go out. They're going to graduate and go either on to the University of Oregon or start designing for people. But no. So we went back to the drawing board. And, they all know how to level a field and measure, but let's talk about this stuff. So to me, that's the most important, that they have anybody who's starting in the field, they got to know 1,000 or 2 plants. And they've got to know shade and sun and time of year. When does it flower? What's its habit? Does it lose its leaves? Does it not? Just a bazillion things. And honestly, if that's not a sport to someone, then they're in big trouble because there's a lot of stuff. Any field, there's a lot of stuff. And I think that's a good way to sort of separate out, do I really want to do this? Because we see a lot of the green pantsuit wearing garden designers that come in, and honestly, we are asked to redo a lot of the gardens that they have done. And I don't want to see that happen. So even the designers that don't seem to be particularly interested in learning about the plants, et cetera, we sort of hold them hostage a bit and make them learn.
You'll learn.
Exactly.
Somebody won't let you go. So if someone is, well, garden designers, I guess, I don't know. Does someone in mid-career or late career hit a spot where they just can't put it together? Do you hit those dry spells?
And then go into garden design.
And then, yeah, there you are. But yeah, I mean, you have this enormous palette of plants. You just, I suppose, throw plants at it till something survives.
Well, I think it depends where you come from. The field of landscape architecture doesn't tend to be plant oriented, so it's more hardscape. And so the plant part of it, it often doesn't, but it could play together very well. A lot of people have come into garden design from different fields, like interior design and that kind of thing. And it could work out very well. It just depends on the level of interest. But I can't tell you the number of people who have come in to the nursery and said, "Oh, I just love what you do. It must be such a peaceful, easy existence. I just love to be here listening to the birds and not doing much." And so it's the same thing with having a nursery and design. You never know what other people are doing and how they're making it look so simple and peaceful.
I've had students say much the same to me.
Yeah, absolutely. No stress.
No stress at all. None whatsoever. I just did a blip. Oh, I'm trying to think, because this has been great. This has been great. Thank you for chatting.
Been great fun.
Yeah, it's fun to talk
It's
about
awesome.
this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, because we're always just barreling down the highway trying to get so much stuff done.
It's a great exercise to be having been barreling all day and then like, wait, stop, say something intelligent and think about it. That's
We're going to get to that part soon,
okay, good.
to the intelligent part.
If you're lucky.
Thanks very much for joining me today.
Pleasure.
I think we got plenty of good stuff. Do I want to shut it down? I'm going to think on it. Usually I do an intro and then I go, oh, I don't need an intro.
Well, especially if we made it an outro.
I have outro and intro music. Ali did
Is it a banjo?
No, Ali composed this this music. Do I have it? I think I do. All right. I'm gonna low battery. Well, it's time to stop. 50 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Time flies when I'm doing all the talking.